Joining us in the studio this morning, a couple of the bright lights from the recently concluded Olympics, and they're drinking coffee, so their lights are even brighter than usual. Chad Salmela, NBC commentator for cross-country skiing, and John Schuster, the skip of the USA men's gold medal winning curling team. Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start off just for giggles. John, you've probably had to get caught up on Chad's gossip-creating, buzz-creating, havoc in the Twitter sphere call for the cross-country race, probably a little after you were done with your own competition. So you're shaking your head.
No, I'll tell you what. The only thing I caught in, and it was before our competition was over, was definitely that race. And you know, the USA was had a good opening kind of weekend, and then we're kind of in this mid-lull where there's lots of fourth and fifth and sixth place finishes by USA athletes, and it definitely was all of a sudden Jesse's race along with a couple other US athletes to start off the last probably 4 or 5 days of the games that got the entire delegation recharged. And it was no small part. I watched that race and heard we had won gold, and I want to watch it. I'm talking about this right now, getting chills, and it's exactly it. When you turn that thing on and watch that last 20 seconds of a race, and every part of it. Again, I'm sitting here discussing it and getting chills, and that's what something a race like that can energize a entire country, and that's I think exactly what it did, and set us up for a strong final push there by the Team USA.
And Chad, you contributed to it, of course, and we've talked about this before, and you say that you're just in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, you could not create the sensation that you've created the last two Olympics if you were trying to do it by design.
Yeah.
Do you have Scandinavian relatives? Scandinavians are stoic, they're quiet, they're not demonstrative people. Do you have Scandinavian relatives spinning in their graves?
Probably, but you know, I'm an American. I was born in the United States, and I'm 100% Finnish, and Finns are pretty stoic. I do want to point out, though, as John was speaking about that last week, that the United States beat Sweden down the stretch in both of those events, which is pretty cool. So talking about Scandinavians.
Well, and they did not weep, I'm sure. They were stoic. They were,
yeah,
you know, and in the meantime, there you are. And you're just kind of, you know.
But they were both favorites. Sweden was favored in the
right.
in the curling final. Sweden was favored in the team sprint, and U.S. teams got. I think that's the point. It's like the Olympics are a special thing because you never really know what you're going to get. You go into the Olympics prognosticating about who's going to win what, and it only happens about 50% true at the Olympics. Where in the World Cup season, it happens about 80% true. So I think there's a wild card in the Olympics. That there's an emotional piece to it that comes into play, both positively and negatively. You see a lot of athletes really choke at the
right.
Olympics, especially
right.
in biathlon, like the sport that I competed in. You see a lot of people miss shots when they can win the gold, and you end up with surprises. So in a lot of ways, Jesse and Keegan were a small surprise. John was probably a little bigger surprise, him and his team. But that's what the Olympics are all about, and that's what I think is really special about the Olympic Games is that it is a high-pressure situation, and it's even a higher-pressure situation than, say, Tom Brady playing in the Super Bowl for his fifth time. You kind of know what's going to happen in
exactly.
the Super Bowl. You see it coming down the season. But at the Olympic Games, it's so rare that you get that chance. You get maybe one to two chances in a long career, in a lifetime, to be at the Olympics on the Olympic stage and have the opportunity John had and then come through with it with a goal. So I think, you know, both Jesse Diggins and Keegan Randall and John Schuster's team's golds really resonate with the country because it really exemplifies the Olympic spirit.
Tell me a little, since I've, of course, never been to a World Cup event, tell me a little bit, you know, I watched a little figure skating on TV because that's the kind of thing that you can usually, you know, a newbie can tell if they fall down, it's a bad thing. You know, it's the kind yeah. of thing that's sort of obvious. And they talked about, I think it was Nathan Chen who had been mm-hmm. favored to, you know, and he'd been so good and so strong and so mm-hmm. stable, but he kind of faltered. What's the difference in the crowd? Is it a much bigger crowd at the World Cup or Olympics or World Cup? Which has a bigger audience?
I don't think it's a crowd there. I think it's the spotlight of the world, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
okay. So it's not so much who is actually there.
We might have the same number of people in the stands at a Grand Slam event or a World Championship as we do the Olympics. But you know, while you're at the Olympics, the people that are looking from behind television sets and listening and paying attention and reading in papers is
and the history books.
I mean, not tenfold. I mean, you're hundredfold.
Sure.
It's the biggest stage for all of our sports that aren't. I mean, it might even be a bigger stage, you know, when you think about even basketball. Like,
yeah.
Okay, the NBA is giant in the U.S., but when you put it on this world stage, you know, all of a sudden add these.
So it's your mind. Out. It's really your
Absolutely.
Mind that you need to conquer.
Yeah, I mean, watching Nathan Chen, it was really heartbreaking in those events where he did poorly, because you can feel for him. If you've ever been an athlete and you've had that kind of glare and you have faltered, you really feel for them. And they talk a lot about Olympic ice, the skaters. Like, the ice at the Olympics has just got a different aura because it's the Olympics. And the poor kid's 18 years old. I mean,
he has another Olympic, so he can suck it up and move on.
What 18-year-old kid, even if they're really good at handling pressure,
can
step up in the first
kind of
time
pressure.
In the Olympic ice and nail it. Like, it's just, when it happened, it was sad to watch, but you're like, yeah, that's about right. You know?
Well, the thing is,
John took three swings. He took three swings at it.
Yeah, no, and this is the third. Yeah, the first two times skipping, and actually even and halfway through this time, exactly. I had similar feelings and anxiety, and when things start going wrong at the Olympics, they snowball really, really fast.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you feel this extra weight on.
Talk about
shoulders.
How you handled that, John. Because again, your third Olympics, you've grown up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some seasoning, you've got a little maturity. Talk about the way you handled that when things started to go south a little.
You know, and I didn't know I was going to, I mean, the thing that I had going for me this time is my team has always, like, we're so familiar with each other, and they were playing good, and we were playing well. And I mean, I had a kind of a mediocre game against Japan, and then later in the day, you know, played in a tough condition game against Norway, and that was just entirely frustrating. And seeing the schedule we had ahead of us was like, this is just crazy that, like, the Olympics could be a place where it's going to be like my worst memories of curling. I mean, you talk about, like, everybody talks about the upset and how big surprise we were, but other than the Olympics, I've represented the United States 8 times at World Championships and World University Games, and I've missed the playoffs once. Yeah. I made the playoffs 7 out of 8 times, and 4 teams make the playoffs.
And like I said, like, nobody knows that
Olympics,
because it's the Olympics.
Right, and at the Olympics, we went 2-7, 2-7, and all of a sudden, you know, it's the biggest underdog story ever. But again, there we were, though,
yeah.
Having an Olympics like the Olympics had been for me, even though we're playing the exact same teams that we play at the World Championships, the same teams we've been playing against forever. But that's where, you know, I think our team kind of maybe had a little more confidence that we could do it with our backs against the wall. I had a night there and the next morning where things changed for me. And I was like, you know what? I mean, it comes back to the last time I was in here. I had my, you know, Luke was probably 5 months old when he was in here with me last time.
Oh, he was so cute.
And I really took to heart thinking, like, you know what? My kids are, if this Olympics finishes the way the last one did and I don't ever get back here again, the only footage my kids are going to have to watch at the Olympics is me being a crab. Seriously. And I was like, this is garbage. Like, I'm not. That I love this game. Like, I love curling and I love competing and I have fun doing it. And I want to, whether win or lose, I want to make sure that these last, you know, 4 games around robin and or 3 games around robin and, you know, anything that would be that, I give my kids something to show their kids and grandkids that, you know, this, you know, my dad or your grandpa or your great grandpa, you know, at least enjoyed himself out there. And I think that was my big turning point was that thought. And
that's incredible.
Yeah. And once we started enjoying ourselves and really thinking about being the best version, like, I wanted to, again, not only enjoy myself, but give their, you know, my kids something to be proud of. And that was literally being a great teammate and being, you know, when things weren't going great out there, you miss a shot, to, you know, kind of just shrug it off and really just live in the moment. And something either clicked or snapped for me in that moment when that happened.
But see, an 18-year-old kid isn't going to have the maturity
to
have that thought.
But that's the opportunity that I have as an athlete and looking down the road as a coach, kind of thing, is to talk somebody through that experience that I had here.
Yeah.
And maybe make a difference. And I mean, we've seen it already and I don't know, I'm sure you've had the same deal, but, you know, I've had, you know, people texting me, emailing, you know, telling us in person, like, you know, I'm going to, you gave me hope to make a change, and my life's going to be different after watching you guys, because you've inspired me to, you know what, no matter how bad something looks like it's going, like, I can change my story.
Like, and that is huge. I mean, that really is huge, because that's the kind of thing that when you're sitting on the porch with your grandkids, you're going to remember, not necessarily maybe I was an Olympic curler, but you're going to, I did something that made people's lives better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chad, talk about your that call a little bit. When did you start to get the social media feedback and realize, oh, good grief, I've done it again. I've become a meme. I've become a cultural sensation.
I think this was way bigger than anything I did in Sochi, because it had to do with the American gold medal.
Right.
That blew up way bigger than any of the exciting call I did in Sochi. But, you know, I actually had to go back and watch that race. I watched it on – we have On Demand, and I just figured out that we had it. And everybody's watching the last 20 seconds. I'm really proud of the entire call, entire race, because I think I set up the context really well of what the situation was. And competitively, Steve did a great job too, my co-commentator, the play-by-play guy. He did a really good job of setting up the history of it. And I was setting up the technical aspects of why they had a chance to win. So I was really proud
of
that.
It was a fabulous collaboration.
It was a much more strategic masterpiece than people are giving it. It looks like it's just a burst of speech from Jesse Diggins, what everybody's seeing. But she set up that point so that she could go by Nielsen really, really well, and so did Keegan Randall. So that's the first thing. But we called it live, but we were on, I think, at 4 a.m.
And so that's Chad Salmela at 4 a.m.
4 a.m. But I've been drinking coffee. And
Breakfast of champions.
There was kind of this moment where we got done, and Steve was worried a little bit that we'd gone over the top, and our producer assured us we hadn't, that they're going to love the call. And then there was a six-hour break, just kind of like, because it wasn't going to air for 6 hours. In the meantime, everybody knew that, all the ski people knew that they won, because people were up in the middle of the night watching the stream feed, but they hadn't heard my call.
Right.
Ironically, I got a text from Keegan about a half hour after the race. And I have it on my phone still. And she said something along the lines of, we got to listen to your call in the stadium. The NBC mix zone people had headphones, and they played back the call. So Keegan and Jesse were the first people besides the people in the booth to hear
the call.
Which was really cool. That felt really good. And then about 6 hours later when it aired, my Twitter kept going off for about 36 hours.
Right.
A couple seconds.
Nonstop.
Not nonstop, but I had to shut my phone off because I was trying to sleep at about 4 p.m. in the afternoon to get ready for the next show. And my phone just kept going.
Right.
So I shut the phone off. And when I woke up, I had 100-some Twitter messages.
But how do you feel as a broadcaster that you can, because, I mean, this is a great moment. And the broadcaster's calls at these great moments become a part of the great moments. They draw attention to these extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. So how do you feel about that? You've been able to do that a couple of times now.
I think this is probably the most, obviously, a career-defining moment as a broadcaster. But as a skier or as a ski fan or a ski journalist, I've kind of built to a point where it was a perfect intersection of my experience and United States skiing coming of age. I think if I had made that call 10 years ago, it might not have come across, or I may not have pulled it off the way I did. I think your instincts get better with every show you call, and I've been doing it for over 15 years. And I think that my instincts were good. And that's all I can say, because I purposely try not to prefabricate any lines or any ideas. And I didn't know how I was going to react if they were going. I had a sense that they were going to have a shot at the gold, but I didn't know they would. And when it became reality, what you saw, what you heard, is what you got, and that was my reaction.
No, so if you planned it, it would be very obvious.
Yeah, you'd know.
So, speaking of really famous, I understand that your next career is going to be an actor, John.
No, I don't think it's going to be an actor. I think it might be in Hollywood of somebody else playing me. I'm not.
Well, you know, Clint Eastwood just cast the real life people in his movie.
Yeah, you know what though? I think my movie, I'm still going to live it for a little while here. I'm not planning on stopping curling here in the next few years. So,
but there's movie talk. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's. I mean, yeah, we've been contacted by numerous. I mean, we're talking somewhere between 10 and 20 different groups that are very interested in acquiring our life rights to write movies. And we haven't necessarily heard anybody's visions yet, but I know there's a group that we're meeting with out in L.A. tomorrow that wants to tell us their vision. There's another one that's flying up here early next week up to Duluth to tell us their vision and show us their, you know, book work and what they've developed as far as their plan for it. So, yeah, it's going to get really real really fast, and, you know, we're going to enjoy that because, I mean,
Who wouldn't?
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Like, somebody wants to write a movie about you? That's awesome. Ridiculous. That's
but you awesome. Got to find out what this life rights involves. I mean, in signing it away, it's like, okay, what exactly? Make sure you've got a good attorney.
No, for sure, for sure. And that's our, you know, our team's going to have somebody representing us very soon here. We've have that in the works. And then
but
I
that
also
really
was talking to my friend
exciting.
Out in L.A. yesterday who she said, you know, she knows she's a vice president of some Disney entity, and she was just talking about she knows some really good people as far as the entertainment lawyers and entertainment agents that can really help us sort through that. So we have some really good resources out in LA through the curling world. Believe it or not,
are you going to Disneyland?
As long as my kids aren't listening, we will be going to Disney World though. We're going first week in May.
Oh, we're going first week in June.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So that was one thing I really wanted to make sure is, yeah. You know, my family's given up so much over this journey, especially the last 2 years. Like, we played more events than any team in the entire world, men or women, last year, which was not our intention, and somehow we stumbled upon all these extra events, and yeah, so for that, I think we just want to go down, and some friends of ours actually offered to us to stay at their Disney property that they have cool. And then my other friend who's that VP of Disney is now arranging for tour guided, so if you guys need hookup, I'll get it.
Hey, we'll take it.
Yeah, so it really is. It's going to be just for me, nice to a little thank you to for sure my kids and my wife, and really go have a fun week away from all of this and really just celebrate, you know, our children and my family. So
that's awesome. Fantastic. That is fantastic. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in this morning. You both of you have planes to jump on. Chad, you've got to go. What are you doing in Denver? You're announcing in Denver?
I've been doing it prior to the Olympics, I was from November through the Olympics, I was doing every weekend in Denver. It's the World Cup cross-country skiing, World Cup biathlon. So there's an NBC studio there that we do tape delayed same-day coverage of all the World Cup stuff. So there's a big event in Drammen tomorrow. So I commentate that tomorrow, come back, and then I go back for the weekend. I've got 3 more weekends, and I'm done traveling for the winter.
Okay. Well, turn your phone back on, because you never know who's going to tweet and say, hey, we need to do, you know, a movie about this commentator guy who makes things happen.
Well, I think it'll be like same thing like with the movie Miracle, if they ever do make that movie about the, you know, about Jesse and Keegan's story, that I think we're going to get the actual original call into the movie. So you might have some money coming your way without doing any more work.
Well, Xfinity was running a commercial all Olympics, and everybody kept asking me, did you make any money on that? I'm like, nope, Comcast owns them. So they've been maximizing my voice on commercials already.
I'll have to hook him up with the Disney person? No, they used my me throwing a rock at in a Comcast commercial, and I won't lie to you, it's that apparently wasn't free, so I don't know.
No.
Maybe I'll have to hook you up.
John, you gotta help this guy out. We're gonna give you guys a couple of minutes to talk so we can get Chad's career sorted. Thank you so much, guys,
Lisa,
for joining us this morning. What a treat. Yeah. NBC commentator Chad Salmela and John Schuster, the skip of the gold medal winning U.S. men's curling team, live in our studios here on Northland Morning.